within the business, disagreements when you've got 100 people, the real estate industry being what it is, you're going to have people who don't see eye to eye. Firstly, of course, prevention is better than cure. Culture, of course, plays an important role in people solving the problems for themselves. We had a recent situation where one of our agents was appraising a property and noticed the fridge magnet of one of our other agents at the property, phoned them up and said, "Hey, I'm going to get this listing. I've noticed your fridge magnet. Hey, let's work together." That's amazing, heartwarming stuff when that happens.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent, for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe.
Well, good morning. It's Steve Carroll. I'm standing in for Samantha McLean this morning on the Elevate podcast. And with me, a very, very special guest, the Managing Director of Blackshaw Real Estate, 8 offices, over 100 staff, without question, one of the most forward-thinking, most successful real estate businesses in the ACT. He's also a co-founder of All Homes, which has been the number one real estate portal since it launched in 2000. And obviously with my realestate.com.au background, it's quite interesting in that All Homes or Canberra is the only market that REA doesn't dominate. And Andrew Chamberlain, who I'm going to introduce in a few minutes, was part of the team that launched that. So we'll touch on that during the podcast. Also, he's one of the longest serving real estate agents in Canberra. He's an auctioneer, been in the business for at least 3, pushing on 4 decades. He's got a bit of a Peter Pan to him in that he doesn't seem to get older, but he's got a plethora of experience and stories to share with us this morning. So, Andrew Chamberlain, welcome to the podcast.
Steve, it's great to be here. Hi, listeners. Hi, viewers.
And it's quite interesting that the reason I'm here is Samantha, who normally hosts these podcasts, is preparing for a roadshow across New Zealand with her AI-powered agent talk. There's not anybody in Australia who understands artificial intelligence better than Samantha. So she's asked me to step in today. And that's a lovely segue into my first question, Andrew, which is a bit of an icebreaker. So if I was to ask ChatGPT to tell me 3 interesting facts about Andrew Chamberlain, what would ChatGPT tell me?
Well, ChatGPT might tell you, and I did this, of course, in preparation, and I was pretty disappointed with how bland it actually was, but it might tell you that I have a shoe fetish. And it might tell you that I'm mildly obsessive compulsive. It might also tell you that I won an international poetry competition when I was in primary school. So there's 3 little known facts about me to kick us off.
Fantastic.
And I'm not going to recite it now. That was, don't ask me that. That was back in primary school.
Yeah, fantastic. One of the things I really admire about yourself, Andrew, is I've been married close to 30 years. I think if my calculations are right, you've been married to Belinda for about 25 years. I don't think I would survive a day in business working with Lorraine. We would definitely fall out. But from the outside looking in, yourself and Belinda, you just seem to be in total coordination. You just seem to do it so seamlessly. You just seem to run the business so brilliantly well. Is it as straightforward as that?
Oh, honestly, it is. We are just on the same wavelength, Steve. We live together, of course, work together. We share many of the same outside interests. We would spend 98% of our lives within 20 meters of each other. And I know that doesn't work for most people, but for us, we just couldn't have it any other way. It just feels right.
Yeah, I have to say, I was driving down to the Gold Coast and I was trying to think of an analogy and I came up with one, which was Torval and Dean. Well, you really need to be in your 40s, 50s or 60s to know who Torval and Dean are, because they were ice skating champions who won gold, I think, for Britain quite a few years ago. And without question, you and Belinda seem to just perform like Torvald and Dean did all those years ago. One of the things I'm noticing is there's a lot of young business leaders coming into the real estate industry, and they're working either with a family relation or they're working with a friend. What strategies have you and Belinda put in place to ensure that the business of you two at the helm continues to run smoothly and really well? What strategies can you share with us?
Well, we've tried to maintain the cult, that family culture across the business. When we speak in one voice. The corporate team at Blackshaw Real Estate is small, Belinda and I, and one other significant person, but others who give us advice. But when we speak to the team, and there are robust discussions at the corporate boardroom level, but when we speak to the team, it's in one voice. And yeah, we make no secret of the fact that the family culture is important to us. And there's a number of other couples that are franchise business owners within the group. And that is appreciated, I think, across the team.
Oh, and what about disagreements? I mean, obviously, when you're running a business, you've got 8 offices, you've got over 100 staff. Without question, you're one of the leading real estate businesses in the ACT. There must be occasions where yourself and Belinda have disagreements. Do you have a process? How do you work through so you don't take that back home and all the baggage that comes with that sort of thing?
Yes, we do. The disagreements between the two of us, we work out as adults should, and again, speak with one voice. When we're home, inevitably, of course, some of the topics of work spill over to the dining room table. We made a decision a long time ago that when we were, and this was before we owned the business, that when we would be at home speaking about our work, that we would speak positively in front of the children. I think it's important that when you are at home speaking about work for their future view of their career, that they hear positive things. They hear perhaps about a problem, they hear about a solution, they hear about the positive impact that you made throughout the day, and when they're growing up, that they're looking forward to being part of that rather than taking problems home and for them to be thinking, oh, gee, I don't like the sound of that. Being in the workforce sounds like a lot of hard work. Within the business, disagreements, when you've got 100 people, the real estate industry being what it is, you're going to have people who don't see eye to eye. Firstly, of course, prevention is better than cure. Culture, of course, plays an important role in people solving the problems for themselves. We had a recent situation where one of our agents was appraising a property and noticed the fridge magnet of one of our other agents at the property, phoned them up and said, hey, I'm going to get this listing. I've noticed your fridge magnet. Hey, let's work together. That's amazing, heartwarming stuff when that happens. Otherwise, we encourage two people to get together, work out any disagreement that they might have. If they can't work it out, then I'll very quickly sum up the situation, make a decision and move on. There's no point letting things fester. Then perhaps reflect on how did this disagreement come about in the first place, and are there any steps that we could put in place to lessen the likelihood of that happening in the future?
No, it makes sense. And for those listeners to this podcast who are thinking about going into business with a partner, with a husband, wife, son, brother, what pieces of advice would you give them, Andrew?
You've got to set the ground rules very, very clearly. It's even more important with a family member than it is with a potential business partner. And we're seeing the problems the Murdochs are having at the moment with their succession plan. If things do go wrong with a business partner, things do go wrong. Of course, people who were strangers at the beginning come together, go into business, and then part without seeing eye to eye on issues is not ideal, but it's not the end of the world either. When you're going into business with family, the stakes are high. And all I would suggest is that you get very clear. It's easy to go into a situation like that and say, okay, we're all in alignment. We all agree on this. We all agree on that. But that won't always be the case. So take the time to document, understand, work out who is going to be responsible for what parts of the business, make people accountable. Yeah, the stakes are high, as I say. Get it right from the start.
And you've got 2 twin daughters and a son. Is that right, Andrew?
Yes, the twins were first. They work remotely in the business. Their full-time profession is modeling. They're catwalk models. They both live interstate and they both work for the business, but remotely. Our middle child, Mia, works in the business. She is an assistant to one of our busy agents, and she's a gym junkie. She does TikTok gym tutorials in her spare time. And our son, he lives in Monaco, and he's a professional cyclist. He turns pro next year at the ripe old age of 19. So
Wow. So four in total. So I've got it wrong. And so three have an interest in the business. Your son at the moment doesn't.
That's right. Yep.
And I've just finished watching on Netflix the series called Territory. I don't know if you've watched it, but it's about a big cattle farm in WA, which is run by a family. And you mentioned the Murdochs. This Netflix series is all about the infighting between the children, the mum, the dad. Again, want to sort of tap into your experience and knowledge. For those entrepreneurs that are listening to this podcast that are moving into a business where family is involved, when it starts to go wrong, how do you stop digging to ensure that the problem just doesn't get bigger and bigger?
Yeah, well, that makes for great entertainment in virtual TV land, but not so good for reality TV, but not so good in business, of course. Just address, recognize issues quickly and address them. Again, as you would with any business partner, I guess, but it's even more important that when family members are involved, you really don't obviously want to get into a situation where business disagreements end up fracturing what clearly would have been a very good family arrangement. I mean, that's really to be avoided at all costs, of course. And I guess making sure that the people who come into the business are treated as equals within the business, they've got to pull their weight. They can't be shown any favoritism. You can't have a prospective employee feeling as if, okay, I would come into that business. It looks like an attractive option for me, but there's a blockage to my path because of the children of the owner that will get favoritism. They've got to pull their weight. They've got to contribute as other members of the team are. The expectations have got to be just as high of them as they are of everybody else. But yeah, if there's issues, they've just got to be dealt with just so quickly.
Yeah, understand. Thank you for that. Now, we said earlier on before we started recording, I was doing my Google search of Andrew Chamberlain, and I probably knew this, but I'd forgotten the fact that you were a co-founder of All Homes in the ACT, which is obviously the number one real estate portal there and has been since All Homes launched in 2000. If I cast my mind back to the turn of the century, searching for property online was just not what people did. It was all about print. So why did you throw yourself at entrepreneurial move to get involved with All Homes? Like why, how did it happen and who was involved?
Look, I was more along for the ride than anything else, if I'm perfectly honest. Peter Blackshaw was a visionary in real estate and really a very creative thinker, always has been. So it started by us wanting to get access to data for appraisals of properties. And we went to the government, who very kindly allowed us access to past home sales. And they very kindly allowed us exclusive access to it on the condition that we published it and made it freely available. So we were initially going to just publish it on the Blackshaw website. It was a bit of a coup, and we thought, no, it's more valuable than that. We'll actually create a separate standalone site for the publication of the sale price data. And of course, the hits went through the roof. And we had Vince Sorrenti, we did TV ads, find out what the property next door sold for, because previous to that, there was just no mechanism for finding out how the sale price data. So it was really on the back of that, the portal was almost, there were just so many people going to the site that it was decided that it would become then a portal. REA existed, Canberra kind of wasn't on the radar at that point, thankfully, and by the time it was, All Homes had just become so entrenched that it has not been dislodged since. With there's been attempts by other portals to come in. All Homes turns 25 next year. So that was a great journey. But it was Peter Blackshaw took the initiative. He really deserves the credit. I was along for the ride. It was a great experience. At one point prior to actually becoming owner of the business. Peter was then focusing more of his attention on all homes, and I was left to run things here more or less. It was an exciting time. It was great to be part of.
Yeah, excellent. And just for the listeners who are outside of the ACT, everybody probably assumes that realestate.com.au is the market leader right across the country. And that is very much the case, apart from in the ACT. And certainly when, as you know, my son went to university in Canberra, and I found it fascinating talking to people in restaurants and pubs saying, well, this is during my time at realestate.com.au. You know, if you are looking for a property, where would you look? And 99 times out of 100, the answer would be all homes, which just goes completely against the grain of the rest of the country. Can I just go back? You've got 8 offices, and those offices are obviously all in different locations. What advice would you give to business owners that have got offices in different locations in the context of creating a consistent culture, consistent values, and a togetherness that obviously is very, very important?
Well, it becomes more challenging the bigger you get, definitely. So we come together 6 times a year as a group. The furthest office is about 2 hours away on the South Coast. So we understand it's an imposition for the Coast team, and we've got visions of offices further afield in due course. So physically, we come together 6 times a year, an awards, a Christmas party, and then 4 training sessions. We have built a pretty comprehensive, intranet's everyone's got one, but we've really invested a lot in centralizing all of the policies and procedures and information and training and everything and the events and everything to do with the business in one central place, rather than each of the individual offices having to create different pieces of collateral. So it all just sits in one place. So the experience, and I guess for any group, you want the experience of someone visiting one of your offices to be very similar to the experience of someone visiting a different office. So that's the way that we've achieved it, is frequently coming together, which will be more challenging. I mean, ultimately, we do end up with offices further up the coast, launching into Sydney, where the Blackshaw family originated from, is certainly on our radar. The brand has traction there. That will be a big leap. But yeah, it will become more challenging.
Yeah, very interesting. And with all successful businesses, values are very, very important. It's the bedrock, it's the cornerstone, any establishment. Can you just share with us the values that are extremely important to yourself, to the culture, your business?
You've got to lead by example. You have to walk the talk, essentially. So we've not that long ago had to let somebody go who was a very good performer within the business, but wasn't in alignment with some of the values. And that, I guess, just demonstrates that it's just not something that we talk about. Having the family in the business, of course. I mean, when people are considering joining us and they say, well, you know, everyone talks about having a good culture. True, but what does that actually mean? And what does it look like? Well, it's easy to say, well, I work with my wife, 3 of the children involved in the business. The bar is high at Blackshaw Real Estate. We don't allow ill feelings to fester. We make sure that people are responsible and accountable. They're well-trained. Yeah. I mean, is there any other way to run a business, Steve?
Absolutely. No, I agree. And I'd just like to ask you, because you and Belinda are very, very competent cyclists. Your son, as you've just mentioned, is a professional cyclist. You've already done the bike ride, the Digital Life bike ride, supporting the charity Hands Across the Water once, and you've signed up to do it again for a second time. Why would somebody of your ability want to come down to a level where all your fellow riders for 5 days or 7 days, because I think you're doing the 700-kilometer ride, are complete novices? Like, why have you signed up?
Steve, well, if you recall 5 years ago, so a lot has changed. Well, I mean, it's been a long 5 years, and we'll just have to see how it looks in February when we're all back on the bike. So 5 years ago, an ex-REA employee was our marketing manager, Laurenick, you remember, and she wrote, Belinda and I, she said that my ex-boss, Steve, is working with this charity. He thinks that you guys would really enjoy being on this ride, and she was very convincing, so we signed up. And when we got there, if you'll remember, on the end of that first day, you said to the group, So put your hand up if this is the first time you've ever, and it was slow and it was okay. And we're all sort of getting the hang of it. And you said to the group, put your hand up if this is the first time you've ever ridden 100 kilometres. And I thought, surely no one's going to put their hand up that this is the first time. They've all signed up for this. They've all had a year to train and practice and they know what they're in for. And more than half the people put their hand up. And I thought, this is just going to be the worst experience of my life. But for each day, we drew inspiration from the people who'd really signed up and challenged themselves to be there. And the cause was inspirational. We were issued with a little card of one of the children at the orphanage that we would reach on the final day of the ride, and you would get to meet that person, and you had that little card on your handlebars. And when it was hot and getting a bit difficult, you'd look down and you'd see the reason that you were there. For Belinda and I, of course, it just happened to be the day that we arrive into Homehug, into the orphanage at the end, having ridden for over 500 kilometres in the heat, was our 20th wedding anniversary on that day. And the whole thing was just unforgettable. So it was just fantastic. And always promised ourselves that we would, and COVID was closing in and the world was mad. But even so, it was an amazing, life-changing experience. And for all of the people there, we made two great friends that we're still friends with on that ride. It was, I would really recommend it.
I think that it shows one of the many qualities you and Belinda have, and that is the ability to adapt to different situations, work with different people, with different abilities. And you did it so beautifully well. And it's great that you're coming back in February to ride with myself and Samantha and Mark and another 30 of us, which is great. One final question I want to ask you is, you've been working in real estate now for 3 decades, coming on to 4 decades. What do you think the future holds for this industry? So if we're doing another podcast 10 years from now, what do you think the industry is going to look like? You can either answer it from an ACT perspective or an Australian perspective, but I'm very interested in your views on that.
Artificial intelligence is moving at an incredibly quick rate, Steve. And I think that the industry will look quite different to the way that it is at the moment. And I guess I'm following people like yourself who are leaders, thought leaders in this space, like Samantha. Obviously, we want to be at the forefront of the advantages and the new opportunities that come with AI, that we're already seeing a lot of. I mean, obviously, writing of advertisements is pretty basic for ChatGPT, but robots are making telephone calls. They're doing callbacks. They're doing callbacks more thoroughly than human beings are doing them. They're doing them more quickly. By 10 o'clock on a Monday, you've got a full report of, well, not that we're doing it as yet. I'm watchful. I'm not quick to embrace new technology, but keen to watch it, make sure that the bugs are ironed out, but definitely prepared to implement it when I'm convinced that there's some benefit. And I definitely believe that there's going to be a tremendous amount of benefit. There's definitely always going to be a role for humans in problem solving. And I mean, the great thing about residential real estate is it's emotional, it's exciting, it's face-to-face. We'll always have an element that AI will be unable to replicate. But it'd be different, definitely different in 10 years' time. Yeah.
What about on the auctioneering? I know you're an auctioneer as well. Do you think that auctions will be being called by human beings in 10 years from now? Or do you think it'll be completely different? What's your thought on that?
I can't see auctions being called by other than a human being. I think that that's an art form. And I think that if robots start calling auctions, I think that will be one of the last of the changes. It's going to be a fascinating few years, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, Andrew Chamberlain, thank you so much for your time today. I've always admired the way that you and Belinda run such a brilliant operation in Canberra. And you're a great leader. I only hear really positive things about you. So thank you for joining the podcast. I will see you in Thailand with Samantha, with Mark, along with another 30 novices sometime in February. So thank you, Andrew.
Can't wait, Steve. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate podcast, with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.